There were at that time, so long ago, some who had in mind to take a shorter path to perfection and others who chose a longer one. These two groups did not clash exactly, but the variety of their endeavors overlapped somewhat, and the confusion which ensued has caused all that men today call evil. All things are working towards perfection, but so great is the field of activity that the period must necessarily be long, if you count it in days and years. As viewed by those who stand in God His presence, it is neither short nor long, but one continuous event, as a river when considered as a unit embraces the whole from source to sea. You will see how this diversity in the development of creation emerges even into the outer realms in which your present earth consciousness functions. For the earth itself is strewn with, and almost made up of, those former trials of wisdom which eventuated in the present accumulation, on the one hand of faculties which are still in process of development, and on the other hand of the materials which have served their purpose in the grand scheme of progress, and have been thrown aside as refuse, as the quality of life became refined and needed more intricate and delicate instruments for its expression. But while this is true of some of these ruins of ages past, others witness to the fact that, in some cases, a direction was taken which led into an impasse where the onward urge found the vehicle inadequate to its expression, became cramped, the pulse of life grew more feeble, faded into inertia, and that line of evolutionary activity came to an end. Those great mammalia and reptilia, of which you have the remains in fossil form, were very wonderful products of creative energy most skillfully employed. But as viewed from the more advanced standpoint of this present stage of evolution, they appear rude and of clumsy workmanship. Nevertheless, it is well to remember that some of these were the great blocks which were used in the laying of those foundations upon which a very ornate temple of living and progressing energy is today still being built, and, by the contemplation of those foundations, you may estimate how much the building has been improved in design, and also you may realize how great is the altitude of that floor upon which you now stand to view the wide landscape of the heavens afar into those regions of space wherein are still being evolved the workshops of other great hierarchies who today are, in their own way, fashioning new worlds at the stage where Earth was when those foundations of present-day life were laid. Now, the further principle of which I speak is this. The course of development shall take a twofold line of direction. That direction shall be first outward, from unity into diversity of expression, as we have already explained. But, also along with this line of movement shall go its twin, which is, that progress shall take the direction from the spiritual ever towards the material. It is like two runners running their course side by side. The one is named from unity into diversity, and the other is named from spirit into matter. These two must keep pace together. Neither must be allowed to outstrip the other, for they run not to win except they win the outward goal together. There were those who schemed to shorten this course by arresting the tendency untimely, before the whole outward course had been run, and turning again the urge of creative life inward towards spirit before the outermost post had been reached and rounded. That post is the material expression of this creative activity which your scientists call the universe. It is not a universe in itself. It is the outer expression of an inner manifestation of a still deeper cycle of development behind which there are those lords of creation who by their willful energizing guide the great fleet of sun systems in their constellations on its voyage through the space of matter towards the port where they shall bend their course round and homeward once again. But when that happens they shall not sail back upon their wake. For, having accumulated all the richness of manifold expression of life in its activity, as they have traversed the outward stormy course, now they shall sail home through sunnier seas, master mariners every one of them, and princes themselves who have fared forth and won, who when they set out were but rowers and cargo men. Now, it was when certain of the great creative lords schemed to shorten that voyage that disaster came. The fleet had voyaged some eternities, and now was to turn in mid-ocean, with full-bellied sails. Here are gales and fierce seas, and the ships were so knocked about that some of them collided and were like to founder altogether. And so it was found that they must sail with the wind, and the course was once again laid toward the original destination. Well, here the fleet has arrived, but the ships are battered in Holland with torn sails and the much evidence of the storms they have weathered on the way. To clear my meaning for you, the ocean is the realm of being expressed in outward expansion of the mind of the infinite and ultimate one. The fleet is that universe which was brought into existence at his command and by the creative lords of whom I spoke. The port to which the outward course was to be laid is the present material expression of this universe wherein you find yourself today. The homeward course is that to which you are now tending, for the outermost point has been reached and is just being rounded. It is the rounding of that point, it is the turning of the vessels out of the harbor of material inertia towards the more active element of the open sea, which is the cause of the much unrest in all directions at the present time. Soon the sails will fill and set steadily upon the hulls, the vessels will settle down to their homeward course, and both officers and crews, now homeward bound, will be of cheery disposition, and ever, as the fleet ploughs through the ocean of being, nearer and nearer will it come to the port from which it set out so many ages ago, and gladness and peace will gather about them as they go for the welcome which awaits them ashore far away ahead into the east where the light is already breaking and the smile of God is seen. When did the trouble begin, Arnold? I mean, at what stage of progress did those creative lords begin to make mistakes? Much farther back than I am able to trace it, my son. Also, although from your point of view it seems as if they erred in their reckoning, yet it is not of necessity so. I stand beyond you in the line of progress, but a little way ahead, and yet I and those who are my companions here seem to see that what we should call mistaken will be found to be, when we arrive in port, not what we should call it now. What we see and think to be evil and imperfect is only the outermost lapping of the wavelets upon the stony beach of a miniature islet, a speck in the midst of an ocean which is infinite. These wavelets seem to break up into spray, but they go back to their big mother notwithstanding, and become again well, ocean, no more, no less. As we may not appraise the profundity of her deeps, and the majesty of her swelling bosom by the egg cup full of spray cast upon a speck of land in her midst, so we may not estimate the wisdom of the great ones by what might we are able to sense of their infinitude. One ant said to another, "We, my brother, are wiser than the aphid, for she is our slave to serve our needs." "Yes," said the other, "but an anteater came that way, and all their wisdom came to nothing, and vanished in a trice." And the anteater, as she stretched herself to doze in the sun, murmured as she lay, "That was not all the wisdom there is, which I heard as I came here, for lo, I myself have absorbed it whole. And I believe there be those who have within them greater store of wisdom even than I. If man be as the ant for wisdom, yet there be also those who are of stature more stalwart, and of strength to match. These are slower to come at a conclusion, and they are not less wise, my son. Arnold." And next headline is. And next headline is. The Creative Hierarchies, unfinished. Monday, March 25, 1918. So far, my son, we have but touched the outer fringe of the garment of God, which covers, and yet reveals his form of light and beauty. And we may penetrate a little deeper, if you will give us your mind, for there be many things to say, and we would say what we are able through you according to your capacity of transmission of our thoughts. It were well that men should bear with us when we try to express God's purpose in the events which they see enacting around them on their daily course of life. For we are very intimate in the affairs of every one of you, and are only obstructed by what obstacles you put between the flow of our energies and their objectives in the world. And we, of whom I speak, are but very little ones in the great scheme of life as it surges through the constellations, bathing all in the one great sea of life which fills infinity with its energy and finds no door to bar it out wherever it would go. We have already told you some of those effects, and of their causes as a result of the meeting of the universe as expressed in matter and the great central source from which comes all that is, and to which all shall gather when the great field is reaped, and the harvest home is due. Now, as we stood in that great crown hall, we were spellbound by the pressure about us of this same great force. For there stood the Word manifest in the Christ of God aloft, calm, majestic, and clothed in beauty. And, mark you, We were at that moment in the presence of him and of what passed outward through his presence and came from deeps of being unknown to us except by what we might glimpse through him. Thus we felt this pressure of potent energy, flung outward upon us through him, of weight and compass beyond our capacity to assimilate. But what we did understand was that he was there to radiate abroad some of the light within and behind his personality for our instruction and uplifting and more perfect joy. Until the great display of creative departments was fully opened out around him, he stood in perfect stillness, as if his every faculty was being pressed to its uttermost tension to produce for us these wonders. When this was done and the grand total completed, he sighed, and then there appeared a throne behind him, and many beings of wonderful beauty emerged into visibility and stood behind it, still and adoring. He turned and mounted the seven steps, and sat within the throne, and then before the steps there appeared a pathway, which stretched outward towards that section of the encircling hierarchies which stood before the race of mankind. These passed up the avenue and stood before the throne and paused with one consent, and bent their gaze aground, while from their realm behind them came the sound of singing, and the hum of music, like some great burst of harmony from the womb of space, far, far away, as if the worlds had stretched between them strings for harping, and their murmurs came to witness to their unity with those who stood in the presence of their Lord. Then there came from behind the throne a radiant prince who stood to the right hand of the Christ and spoke to those who had drawn near. His words were quite distinctly heard by us, but the anthem from the worlds afar continued while he told them that now was the Christ of God vindicated in what sacrifice he had made for the expression of love and the whole universe of God. Note by G. V. O. Here the power failed and I was unable to proceed. The power failed because I was overtaxed with parish work, war work, keeping in touch with the lads away, over 200, and their families at home. The double harness was too much for me, so they broke off suddenly in the midst of the above message. On Wednesday, April 10, 1918, my wife, whilst using the planchette, asked the following question: why was the writing with George stopped? Then her father replied, through the planchette, "Let me explain. George was feeling the strain very much, and wished to stop, particularly as the summer was coming on. The rest was needful, and will be beneficial. But he must not think it is finished yet." Footnote 1, see note below, the break of a year note by H. W. Inham. It will be noticed that nearly a year from March 25, 1918 to February 19, 1919 intervened between the receipt of the message given in the last chapter and the message which now follows entitled The Christ Creative. Some details may be added here regarding this interruption to those given in the note from Mr. Valo and directly above. It appears that towards the close of the summer of 1918, calls to sit again in the vestry came to Mr. Valo and through his wife. On October 24 he resumed the sittings and continued them until November 1. The communications received did not continue the narrative which had been interrupted on March 25, and he doubted that they were given wholly under the influence of Arnold. He discontinued the sittings. On January 14, 1919, in response to further requests, he again began to sit. He then received a detailed narrative of the progress of one man from death through the dark realm to the borderland of the regions of light. This was completed on February 14. In Mr. Valoan's opinion, these communications were given him to prepare him again for the task of receiving messages from Arnold, for on February 19 Arnold resumed his account of the great assembly at the University of the Five Towers, and, from then until April 3, describe the enterprise there undertaken. It will be observed that, apart from an explanatory statement of two sentences, the account was continued as if there had been no interruption. Too, this sounds very much like what is called in the Urantia book the Lucifer Rebellion. Perhaps it is not exactly that, but Lucifer had different ideas about advancing the mortals under his care. He was out of sync with God's will, and as such could be considered evil. Yet the Bible has given him an unfair rap. Chapter 5, Arnold's communications again, resumed February 19, 1919, and finished on April 3, 1919. The Christ Creative. Wednesday, February 19, 1919. We who are with you tonight are of that company who a year ago were describing to you the ceremony in the Crown Hall. At that time, we were obliged to cease, as you remember, for you were spent of power. We now take up that theme once again and continue it here and now. The first of those hierarchies to approach the Christ in praise and that one who sent him was that of the human kind. Then a herald came forward and addressed the assembled multitude in their several departments. These were of varied development, some were more advanced than others. And to each he spoke in their turn, to guide and to encourage them in their forward urge of evolutionary progress. This much in brief. Now to the next stage of the ceremony. Round the throne in which the great Christ creative sat there appeared a cloud of vapor. Very beautiful it was to see it as the colors invaded it and mingled within it like web and woof. Then from the rear of the throne and of the cloud there shot up a circle of rays, fan-shaped and spread high and wide, while he sat in the lower middle of them. They were of blue and green and amber, these rays, and were heavenly projections of those forces which are generated from the material departments of his realm, the realm phenomenal in substance of matter of which the earth and planets and stars are made. Then the moving cloud condensed upon itself and its various hues so arranged themselves that when it contracted to form a cloak we saw them once again in their appropriate and relative places, for the cloak when it had sat itself down upon him and had enwrapped his form about as he sat there wrapped and still was very beautiful. The great piece of it was blue, dark and deep blue, but bright nevertheless. The edging was of gold and inside this edging was a border and it lay spread out upon the pavement and settled upon the steps. This border was broad and of gold, silver, green, with crimson and amber in two broad lines on the boundary of it inward. The blue robe had upon it at large intervals the semblance of a crown inverted. And it had a collar of pearl upon the shoulders of it. The collar shone forth with many hues. It was not pearl grey, but how shall I describe it to you? It shone from within and sent forth rays about his head, not obscuring his face from us but framing it in a halo of radiance. Viewed in perspective with the rayed background it looked like the nucleus from whence those rays issued forth. But this was not so, except as it appeared to us. Upon his head was no crown but a circlet only of white and red which bound his hair about behind the ears, somewhat after the fashion of our crown of worship of which I told you. One, you are careful to give me these colors in detail, Arnel. What is their significance? I cannot give you the detailed explanation as I have given to you the detail of the colors as they appeared to us and were so beautifully and intentionally disposed in their groups. But I will tell you broadly and that is as much as you could understand. The rayed background was the universe of matter which for those who have eyes and ears serves to display the figure of him, the Christ, and to throw into relief the benign aspect of his appearing. The circlet coronal was the distilled essential of humanity both of earth and those who had passed on into the spheres here. It was of red and white. Had that a meaning? Yes. It showed the transition of humanity out of the spheres of forcefulness, desire, and self-assertion into those of attunement with the one light in whom all colors blend into restful peace as they who make up those rays attune themselves in company. This is the transition from the red into the white. And yet that white light is the most perfect of all as it is most potent also. Those who stand outside to view see a snowy stretch of arctic cold and stillness. But those within that light see its component hues each in its own great beauty and in their mingling feel the warmth of their glow. To those outside white light is cold. To those within it is the glow of love and of peace. Have you been within the white light, Arnel? No, my son, not wholly within, but just upon the doorstep of that shrine. Too, and there I only came by greatly daring and much forcefulness of will exerted for that purpose. But that one time alone and by permission. It was not I who laid his hand upon the door, but one great in the service of the Christ creative. He came behind me in case I should fail of my hold upon my will were I to look upon his high beauty at that moment. He reached over my shoulder and cast his cloak about me and before my eyes, and then pushed open the door a little way and for a moment held it so. Thus, my eyes shaded and my form veiled by his cloak. I saw and felt the radiance within that very glorious temple of the Presence. and it has sufficed me, my son. I know what humankind shall be one day when he has dealt with all the tail of his operative energies and all is consummate in him. Now his face is towards us lower ones, and the human race behind us, of whom we are the heavenly skirmishers. In that day he shall turn about and lead his redeemed myriads towards the Father's throne, himself then truly one with them. In that day also all the red in the circlet shall have become blended into the white, and the white shall glow a little more warmly for its tincture. Now, my son, you have distracted me so that I have spoken all this about that circlet coronal. What further shall I say of the cloak of blue than this? As the background of material essence showed up the form and shape of him and of his cloak and his throne, as the crown blended in one humanity of earth with humanity's potential exaltation onward into heavens of spirit, so the robe covered all of the body of him by means of whom all creation evolved outwardly from the Father. In that robe were blended all those great forces which move and enable and vivify matter and organism. Some of these you know: electricity, ether, which is not alone inert but has a force of its own, magnetism also, and the motive force of light rays, and also others more sublimate. These all blended in his cloak to hide his form and yet to outline it and the throne. What is the signification of the inverted crown? Why inverted? In place of the crown he wore that circle of red and white. One day he shall wear the crown itself when the circle has become all white and has been absorbed into the candid white of his personality. Then the cloak shall be lifted, spread out, and thus it will float heavenward. Now itself inverted, shall it be displayed itself as the background of him and of his throne in place of the rays material which shall then be no more seen. Then also, when in that far great day, he stands to review his myriads once again, over him and around him shall those many bright crowns be seen, not now inverted, but erect. They are of diverse species in design. But all then in their normal position shall point toward the further glories as the Christ shall marshal his redeemed and lead them onwards in their brave array. Arnal. And next headline is The Hymn of Lamel. Thursday, February 20, 1919. Later the cloak of blue became vaporized and the melted away into the atmosphere. Then the Christ creative sat within his throne but changed of garment now. Upon his shoulders there was a cape of that same deep blue, but it fell away on either side of him, and beneath it was displayed a vest of gold which reached to his knees and fell below a little as he sat there. It was belted with a broad band of green with gold in it, and it hid a hem of ruby color. The circlet still was upon his head, and within the circlet a band of stars scintillating many hues about him. In his right hand he held a crown of dull white metal. It was the only thing about him which had no radiance, and was by the same token the more to be marked by us who saw it. Now he arose and laid the crown upon the steps before his feet and stood to face us. A while he spoke his will to us. He said, "You have but lately seen what is happening within my kingdom. Yet there are who may not come to look upon its inner beauties as you have done. In those far outlands they are able only with dim thoughts to think of me, for they are not yet come to their full awakening. Tell these friends, good Lamel, of the present estate and coming destiny of those so far removed." Then upon the first step of the throne stood a man who was of those who attended and had waited in silence on either side the stairs. He was clad in white with a silver belt upon his left shoulder and about his loins. He therefore spoke to us these words, and as he spoke them the voice of him seemed to be made up of many chords of music, not one note, but multiple. The tones were resonant, so much that they floated forth into the air about us and passed above us until each note struck some gossamer string of music and it responded. One and another aerial throng was thus set vibrating until the whole sky was tremulent with music as if a thousand harps were harmonized. Yet were his words not the less clearly heard, but became the more tuneful and descriptive, more at one with the nature of the things and acts they signified, more full of body and substance, as you should take a picture of black and white and turn it into colors. So there was life in his song and not music only. So he addressed himself to his theme. What if the presence of him seems to be far removed away in yonder higher realms of glory? He is here nevertheless, for we are progeny of him and in his life we live. What if we be to them afar down in those lands where light is dim as he to us? They be our brethren still, and we to them our family. What if they know not where their life is hidden, by which they live and live amiss? They feel and grope and grip but minimally. Yet they do at least this correctly and stretch their hands all blindly towards us with palms upturned. But in their night they stumble and then stray into the side tracks. Their onward course is hindered, while they who see a little await the return of those errant who see less still, and they come forward slowly but as in one company together. What if the way be long, shall we not also await their coming here that they and we may move together onward, upward, both more greatly blessed in mutual love, so giving and receiving each to other, both? Yet shall we wait, and only wait, while they towards us stumble on their way? Or shall we go and bring them, as the Christ once took her off his robe of glory and, clad in simple workaday clothes, sought out those sheep who strayed, as these do stray, and brought to earth what earth would soothe, that long time ago? That this should be the powers on high made marvel, and they who hover over cosmos greater than this of ours bowed low before him as, of reverence due, they made obeisance to the Son of God in his humility. For they who are so great in wisdom learned now more greatly still how love was fashioned for the universe, and the whole universe is both lovable and of love. So what if he be high from whom is all? We have his Christ. What if there be beyond, below, those more distant set than we? The Christ reached them too. What if they be weak of limb and dim of sight? He is their strength, and he shall be their lamp to lead them so they don't stray much, nor be finally lost. And if they do not know these brighter realms as we do know them to our joy, some day they shall rejoice with us, and we with them some day. But which of us shall take the crown, with strength appointed to this war? Who shall attempt to place it upon his head, for it is dull and heavy in its weight today? Yet, let him who is strong and simple in his faith stand here and take the crown. What if it be now lustreless? It shall some day be radiant with the light which is now hid within it, when the task is made complete, some day. There was a great silence when he had ceased. Only the vibrations of the music ambient about us hovered still wistful and caressing, loath to still themselves into silence until the singer had been answered. Then, when no one came forth, none daring this high venture, the Christ himself descended and took up the crown and placed it upon his head, and it sank deep upon his brow, for it was very heavy. Yes, my son, it is heavy upon him today, but there is now beginning to show a luster about it which it had not then. So he stood and called to us, "And who will go forth with me of you, my brethren?" And when we heard his voice we knelt, one and all of us, beneath his benediction. Arnal. And next headline is Earth and Mars. Wednesday, February 26, 1919. And what is this high venture of which you speak, Arnal? Of that I am about to tell you, my son, and you be able to write it down, for it is of significance to those who shall find within their hearts some desire to understand events of these recent centuries. You shall note that the enterprise did not have its conception at the Tower of the Angels. No, that was born ages ago in realms higher than those of which I have spoken of. At every age, in its beginning, the high ones, so we are told, take counsel. Results accruing from recent ages are gathered and laid before them. Those of ages very ancient are summarized in tabulated form. Those of the nearer ages are given in greater detail. Those of the ages most recently passed, in full. These are considered in their bearings upon events at that time proceeding on Earth. Then the cognate planets have their hearing, and next both Earth and them together. So the council gets underway, and, with no hurry, comes to such conclusion as, when put into operative form for the next age, will be harmonious with the acts of other hierarchies who have in charge the goodings of planets other than this of Earth. Please explain the phrase cognate planets. I speak of those other worlds which have nearest relation to Earth both as to degree of development and of the trend of its evolution, those planets which have followed a free-willed career most like that of Earth, and also have attained to a degree of intellect and spirit most in accord with Earth in its present age. These are not only those which are most near Earth in spatial distance, but, as I say, in intellectual and spiritual content. Can you name them? I could, but refrain, lest I might be said to expound the obvious. I see a phrase in your mind which I appropriate to my service, to play to the gallery. Moreover, there are planets which are not visible to you, although they are within the solar range, which must be considered in this matter. Also, there are some few which are on the borders of this system but obey the pull of another star, and yet are cognate much with Earth. And two there be which are not only within the solar range, solar system,